On 12-6, when you called, when you called the clinic, do you recall telling Romney that Kelvin had been running and jumping without supervision?
Never. That wouldn't come out of my mouth because he wasn't.
Okay, but you never
said... I mean, he wouldn't have been able to, even if he wanted to, or if I tried to.
So you never said that to Romney?
Absolutely. Okay. Never.
When you took the bandage off the first time, was it covering the incision after this?
Yeah, it actually started leaking through the red bandage that was on. It was very wrapped. But when I believe it dehisced and started splitting way before the 3 days that we had to take off the bandage. We were told in post-op care to remove the bandage, and that's when I, you know, absolutely saw, oh my gosh, this really is bad.
Okay.
And ran him to the ER and then to the Shapiro.
Okay. And why did you send a picture of Kelvin's paw?
Of Kelvin's what?
Paw.
Oh, it was so swollen. And I don't think those pictures, I don't know if you guys got all the pictures because even the ER took some. So
We did.
Okay. His paw was like 5 times the size of his other paw. And, you know, after, you know, I think it was at least 2 days, especially after taking the bandage off, it was not going down, you know. Afterwards, I see his blood work that shows he had a horrible infection with white blood count and lymphocytes and you know. But, and he was on an antibiotic the entire time that he was under his care, Jeremy's care.
Okay. So, can you just...
I mean, it was most definitely infected. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay, describe what happened with Kelvin from 12-8, that's the day after the staples were placed, and 12-20, the day you called and got the recheck appointment.
So when the staples started falling out, which was within 24 hours, so I'll say 40 at the latest, they were popping off. I don't know if it was on the 20th.
I'm sorry, I'm referring more to his confinement at that point. Was he you continuing
well,
with the confinement during that period?
After the staples, when they popped off, when I talked to their office, I was told to go buy Steri-Strip and apply Steri-Strip to his leg until Dr. Shapiro could see him.
Okay.
And that was not... You know, we did that, but of course it was still dehissing. So.
Okay, but I'm referring to the confinement.
And okay.
He was still being confined at that point.
He was confined the entire time until he died.
From the time of the first surgery up until he went to emergency, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He couldn't walk. I mean, we were having to hold his body up, you know, to get him to go to the bathroom. So he was walking on 2 front legs, but even that stopped before the second surgery. I mean, he was carried outside.
Okay. Then later on 12-21, what did you exactly see when you described the pin protruding from the skin? Did you actually see metal?
Yes, it was sticking through the skin. There should be a picture, and it was a screw.
Okay, the screw, you actually saw it sticking through the skin.
And the ER has the pic of that too, because it happened twice. The first time, and then the second surgery, it happened but it was in a lower spot.
So you saw the screw poking through the skin the first time also?
Yes.
Actually through the
skin. I saw his entire leg. Go ahead.
You actually saw the apparatus, the metal.
Absolutely.
Both times. Prior, the first both surgery times. And the second time, okay.
Both times.
That's all I have.
I mean,
I just want to say, Dr. Nosley,
real quick that when before it had poked through, it was really, really up against the skin. Like you could feel that it only had a couple of layers to go. But ultimately, both times, it poked through in the two different places.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. I have a quick question for you, Ms.
Sure.
Brown. Was Kelvin
wearing
a cone after the surgeries?
The entire time. And the cone that they provided, the big plastic one, cracked. So we ordered, because of the no answering the calls ever, we ordered another one that, you know, we kept on him that was softer, but he still at no time could reach his leg.
Okay.
I mean, this was serious.
Right.
I mean, he's like my son.
Right.
I know that sounds stupid, but...
No, not at all. And my other question then, so when you initially took Kelvin in for his first visit, and you say he was 11 years old, he'd had, you know, issues with his legs for, you know, really since birth, I guess.
Yeah.
And you talked about, you know, kind of the quality of life. Were you prepared in that moment to be talking about euthanasia as a possible option, or did you not think you were there yet?
I absolutely did not think, after hearing that of his success rate, I had no idea that this was going to end up being a case where it was not a choice anymore because his leg was so mutilated. There was just that, you know, according to the ER, it was still a shock. But, you know, I know that he probably said, because of surgery, you have to say, now there are chances of him passing away because anesthesia and yada, yada, yada. I'm sure that discussion was discussed as a legal thing, you know, like when we tell patients before surgery, but never did I think my dog would end up dead.
Well, but
ever.
I mean, before you actually had the surgery, when you said you wanted to talk about just his general quality of life before any surgical procedures, did you think at that point that humane euthanasia might be the, you know, the best thing for him? Or did you think that you hopefully had some surgical options? Or
I totally thought that him fixing the hip from the first time was going to be successful, according to what he told me. Got worried that he called in the middle, you know, after he was on the table, and he switched it to the knee.
Okay.
But I didn't, I mean, always you have to talk about, you know, if things go wrong, and, you know, just like even with a tonsillectomy, you know, for a human. But I remember thinking, you know, when the ER said, really the best thing to do is put him down, he's in severe pain. I was a basket case. And I was so angry because this doctor, Jeremy, would not talk to us. I mean, his office, there was no answering anything unless we actually showed up in person, like the vet had told us to do the first time when they were at capacity.
Right, okay. Thank you. Do any of the other board members have any other questions? Okay, so thank you, Ms. Brown. We are now gonna go back to Dr. Shapiro and his legal counsel to see if you have any additional remarks or questions that you would like to ask.
I have just a brief statement.
Sure.
TPLO surgeries are problematic even when the surgery is performed appropriately and owners are compliant with discharge instructions and restrict their pets' activities. They're doomed for problems and failures when even just slight lapses and restrictions or confinement can happen, and it appears that's what's happened in this case. This case should be dismissed with no violations. The evidence before you demonstrates that the procedure was performed appropriately. I'd ask that you take a look at Dr. Moore's report. he evaluated the matter and offered an opinion saying that the procedure was done appropriately. And there's been some discussion today about what was said and what wasn't said. I would direct you to look at the medical records, which are made contemporaneously with these conversations 6 months ago when this, or 9 months ago now, when this was first, when this case was going on, as the most accurate reflection of those conversations before board complaints were filed, even before second surgeries were done, to get an idea of what the at-home situation was. I think it's also worth noting that this is a 10-year-old dog that has had multiple other 11. Issues going on, and that those other issues likely played into the decision to ultimately euthanize the dog. When the dog went to the 24-hour ER facility, they recommended numerous gastrointestinal diagnosis, abdominal x-rays, hospitalization, and supportive care. And apparently due to financial constraints, Calvin was pointed down. The investigative committee was right when they concluded that the surgical complications weren't the result of anything that the vet did during the surgery, but likely due to things that happened outside of the vet's control. I personally know about this surgery. My dog had this surgery, and the importance of keeping the pet confined is really vital. And in my experience, sounds very similar to this complaint, that when you have other people that didn't have the conversation with the vet, sometimes maybe what, you know, for the caretaker, it doesn't get the stress, the importance of how important it is to keep the patient confined, especially in the first few days and weeks after the surgery. Given that, I'd ask that you find that, dismiss this case with no violations, and confirm with the findings of Dr. Moore. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any more questions from board members? Okay, you may step back. This concludes the portion of the informal interview in which the board hears testimony. The board will now deliberate and decide what to do in this matter.
Tracy?
Miss Brown, we'll just have you be silent now because the board is actually going to discuss the case, okay?
So I can't comment on what his lawyer just said?
No, unfortunately, it's just the board that can discuss now.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Sure.
The big question here in my mind is, should any type of orthopedic surgery have been performed on this patient? Listening to the audio, one of the doctors on the investigative committee made that point, that he didn't feel like this dog should have had any type of orthopedic surgery, FHO or TPLO. I believe it was Dr. Butler, and he made a very, I think, telling statement. He said he didn't think that if any surgeon had done this and done the best possible TPLO that could be done, the same thing probably would have happened. And I agree with him. Now, he didn't feel like that was a violation, and so that's the discussion. But I happen to agree that you put this together with the multiple problems, orthopedic problems that this dog had, possibly even neurological, and then to state that there would be we would expect some improvement by doing an orthopedic surgery. We had degenerative disease in both hips, both knees, maybe a degenerative myelopathy or other neurological deficit going on. So that's point number one, that I believe this patient should not have had any type of orthopedic surgery. As to the actual procedure, and we had the discussion of the four screws and the six screws, and let me back up a little bit. I've done some plating, but I've done many cruciates, not TPLO, so familiar with the anatomy, and apparently that's an okay thing to do. Certainly in this patient with this mobility, I think I would have tried to put the 6 screws, but I'll defer to the doctor's decision at that point. A little problem, there was a continuous suture put in this dog's skin. In orthopedics, because of the problem with infection, and one break in that suture line, and the whole thing falls apart when you do a continuous. While that, again, that's doctor preference, in an orthopedic surgery, and we ultimately did have a dehiscence, I question that. Infection, was it adequately addressed? We had antibiotics for, I think, a week after each procedure, and then when things fell apart, some enrofloxacin, I think that was good. But there was no culture, and one of the reasons for screws backing out is infection at the site of the screw. I've done a lot of work on greyhounds, and that's a particular problem with them. You do plating, and then you've got a screw that's coming loose because of infection. And there was evidence of infection ultimately at the emergency clinic. There was drainage, and how many weeks now are we out? So this thing eventually did get infected. The investigative committee focused on the non-compliance issue. And even if you have the best compliance, a dog still has to get up to go to the bathroom, unless you're gonna just say for weeks on end, we're gonna clean this dog up. They still have to get up and go outside. And this implant in place with this dog's condition, I question that this case should have proceeded the way it did. Now, proceeding with surgery was the doctor's judgment call at that point, with consultation from the owner. I don't agree with that, but does that matter? Does it rise to the level of a violation that a surgery was recommended that shouldn't have been recommended because it was his judgment at that point? I think that's a point that we need to discuss. The other point is, when we look at a minimum standard of care, it's really hard in this case because TPLO is a highly specialized procedure. When I started practicing, it wasn't even available. And then it was done by a few orthopedic surgeons. And then gradually it became the gold standard for cruciate. And now I think we've backed up a little bit on that. But then only recently has it been to where non-boarded surgeons are trained in this procedure. So it's tough to look at, did we meet minimum standard of care in a highly specialized, probably 90% plus time is done by a board certified surgeon. It makes it really hard for me to understand minimum standard of care. Maybe the minimum standard of care was met. So that's my two problems with it. And so before making any motions or deciding, I'd like to hear from other members.
I agree with you in the communication. For surgery on this patient, I wouldn't have necessarily thought of this as an ideal surgical candidate. When I look at the differential list on the first exam, we've got hip dysplasia, and then the second thing is suspected degenerative myelopathy. So why, I mean, the dog has got a really not great looking hip on one side. The other one doesn't look fantastic. You know, I've done plenty of FHOs on bigger dogs. I know that's not necessarily smiled upon, but
I do too.
You know,
I do.
And they can do fantastic, but you have to evaluate your patient. And if you're already suspecting that you have that much nerve issue, isn't that one of the biggest things when you do an FHO, is making sure that you have good nerves so that you get that muscle, right, and that support? So I agree with you 100%. I would question whether surgery, even the FHO, was mm-hmm. the right way to go. And then when you find that the opposite leg has a torn cruciate, you know that the one leg is already significantly painful and that they're not using it well. then we're going to do a surgery that we're going to have to put all that weight on the other one. Again, it's the surgeon's call, but I just wonder how much communication was had with the surgeon and going into all those details with the owner to make a unified decision on what was best for the dog. You know, it may have just been better to do, you know, palliative care for X amount of time for whatever this guy had left. So that's a big question to me. Technique-wise, I echo a lot of what you said. You know, here and there with the simple continuous and the, those are preference. I've done a handful and always do intradermal with staples on top and have never, knock on wood. So, you know, those are preference. It's just, I see a lot of communication issues, a lot of opportunity that could have been had beforehand, let alone afterwards when there were complications and there didn't seem to be that supportive care there.
Exactly. Especially the conversation on the phone. We're switching from an MHO to a TPLO. And it was a brief conversation.
Yeah.
And that really bothered me.
I would say from listening to the owner, it's clear that she did not understand what was going on, right? Like, it's not that she's now understands and doesn't, we didn't know when that occurred. She still, I don't think, understands what actually transpired here. I think it's going to be really hard, I think, to find a violation of saying you shouldn't have done the procedure, because that's medical judgment and we're looking at it in hindsight, and I just feel like I don't know that we'll be able to say that. I think that the issue is whether we feel like all the pluses and minuses of doing any surgery in this case, whether that was communicated. And I feel like we're saying the communication was clearly the issue here. But I think we have to focus on that, because I don't think we're going to be able to say should it have been done or not. I will point out, though, that there was a note from another associate in this office that basically indicated they did not feel that they should be doing surgery. I mean, it was stated that if the medication was no longer helping, euthanasia was not a bad option, the dog likely had degenerative myelopathy, which has no cure and minimal treatment available. So that was even before all of this happened. So like, there were other things, other people that were saying, I don't know that this is the right way to go. And it happened before this,
right? And the owner's hearing, you know, the FLO surgery, 90%, you know, success. And I think she was really focusing on that, you know.
And I don't know if that was really said or not. Like, we didn't hear that from the doctor's point of view. I tend to believe that she thought the prognosis was way better. I don't think anyone should say a 95% chance when you have all these other conditions going on. We're questioning whether it should have even been done, let alone a 95% prognosis.
Maybe that was a statement. In general, FHOs have a 95%.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, I can't really say where that
came from. But does it matter to the other 5% where it wasn't successful? I mean, if you really look at a success rate, that still means there's still a percentage of no success. There's failures. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make the group that's experiencing a failure feel any better that 95% were successful. So I think that even if that conversation were had, doesn't mean your pet is going to be in that percentage of success.
Especially not when it has multiple other conditions.
That's the issue. You wouldn't say that if you were evaluating this patient. I just can't imagine that 95% success.
And I'm trying not to focus on that because I don't know the context in which that would have been said if it had been said, right? So I'm trying to focus on, from what we heard from the owner, clearly there was a lack of understanding of what they were getting into and what the outcome was going to be.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine in her perspective, here she gets a phone call and her dog, again, whether it was true that he was actually already cut open or not, saying, okay, now we're gonna switch gears here. I'm sure that, you know, all of a sudden you're kind of caught off guard, a little bit frazzled, and you don't know, you know, all the terms, and you don't really know what to do, and you feel rushed, and you're like, okay, let's do it. There's not even any time to sit and, you know, Google what that even means and what,
and
you know.
In her mind, she wanted to do anything. She heard the word, we can help, we can improve, and that's, do it.
Yeah.
Do it. And whose problem is that? what I heard or what was told to me, it gets into, just like you said, communication issue. So I agree. It's real hard to find the violation if we are to, if you're to take this surgery should not have been done, and no reasonable orthopedic surgeon would have ever done this surgery. If you take that, maybe we can get to a violation. If it's, this was a judgment call, this was his judgment, and you're in that camp, then there's no violation, and I'm struggling with it.
I still feel like it's a violation. Even if you say it's a judgment call, he did it. He would have done it. Three of us. I don't know if you want to weigh in. Would you have done it?
I think there was a change of course. Not only was there a change of course, there was a pretty aggressive change of course the other way. I think going from the
FHO
to TPLO on a contralateral leg.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was a switch of mindset, and I don't think that mindset was conveyed.
Agreed.
So, I mean, even though a lot of us here are saying we would not have chosen to do it, we are also looking at it after the fact. And again, I don't know, maybe he's just more aggressive in orthopedics than what I would be, right? I think another factor to consider is whether a referral was
under. Referral. They talked about that in the investigation.
Yeah.
Did you think about referring this multiple problem dog?
I mean, even to see
consult.
If an orthopedic surgeon thought that this was a good way to go.
I think they asked him, did you think about doing any consulting with the orthopedic surgeon? He said no.
And
the investigative committee.
That still goes back to how well did we educate and communicate with our owner about what we were getting into and what the options and prognosis really were.
Yeah, and I waited weeks before I actually went through with my surgery on my dog after, you know, did all my homework and went back and forth on it. So, yeah, it was.
So,
ultimately, I think it's a judgment call about the decision that was made and who made it.
Mm-hmm. That's what it boils down to.
Yeah.
We have to decide who's more credible in that situation.
Yeah.
Is that what it comes down to?
I guess so.
Okay. Well, does anyone want to make a motion or have any other?
Well, the other issue is in finding a violation of a licensee who's no longer a licensee in Arizona.
He's still a licensee, but just not practicing.
Not practicing, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, if you hold a license.
If you hold a license in Arizona, then still under all the burden. Okay, understood. Okay. Well,
I don't even know if I would necessarily, if I were making the motion, put it under communication, because I feel like it's more along professionally acceptable procedures for really fully educating the client about what you were about to do and what they were getting into.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's communication.
It's a whole new set of risks.
Yeah.
A whole new set
of. Yeah. Let's go that way. Yeah, help me out with that.
Should be R311-501 for professionally acceptable procedures regarding how well this owner was educated on the condition, the multiple conditions the pet had, and what surgical techniques were going to entail.
Yeah.
And their prognosis. And I think that's 32 number
11 or 12. 12.
So I make that
okay.
Motion.
Thank
hopefully you.
You
guys wrote
Thank
that
you.
Down. I was trying to find it. Okay, so we have a motion. Did I hear a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to find a violation. I'm going to do voice vote. Roll call.
Dr. Byrne?
Aye.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James is an aye. Mr. Lobe?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon's recused. Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
Dr. Wright is absent. 7-0.
Okay. Okay. The board has voted to find Dr. Shapiro in violation. This concludes this matter. And Dr. Shapiro, you will receive written confirmation of the board's matter, of the board's action shortly. At next month's meeting, the board will consider adopting proposed findings of facts and conclusions of law, and after doing so, we'll then discuss and adopt disciplinary action. If anybody has any questions, they may contact Victoria Whitmore, the executive director at the board's office. And this concludes the formal interview. Thank you all for participating.